And welcome to another episode of Gopher Gridiron Radio. I'm Luke Buer.
And I'm GopherDigest.com publisher Ryan Burns. We welcome you back to break down the Gophers' third victory of the season here. A nice little homecoming victory over Ohio. And as always on the Gopher Gridiron Radio podcast, to break down each and every Gopher game, we have former Gopher football alum and Eden Prairie Eagle, Mr. Derek Burns, joining us this evening. So, Derek, how are you?
Very well. How are you?
We're doing well, and it should be another good evening here on the podcast, breaking down another Gopher victory. So we'll see how things go tonight.
Always good to talk college football.
All right, let's start with the special teams. A little bit of a struggle this week, and I think it's a good place to start, because very often with a Jerry Kill team, you don't really notice the special teams because they're one, either quite good or, they're usually quite good or pretty effective, so they don't stick out too much. So, Derek, what was your assessment of the special teams this week? Let's start specifically with, the return games.
Well, it's some unacceptable errors, obviously. Something that I think we saw a little bit, especially in the punt return game, we saw, I guess, a little bit of foreshadowing of that in the previous weeks. It just seemed a little bit shaky. And actually, I think it starts, the obvious thing is the fumble and the muff punt, and you've got to have that. But I think it actually starts with the punt return blocking has been poor, and that's been for 2 weeks in a row. So, those issues culminate in a fumble or a muff punt, but it starts with, guys blocking someone into the returner, letting two or three guys free release. And this is not on a punt block. This is on a called punt return where they're not actually going after the block kick, in which case, of course, you're going to have, several guys on the punting team release free to the returner. But, the bottom line is those are mistakes that the coaches, of course, are going to be working on this week, but you can't have them. It can kill you, and it made a huge impact in the game on Saturday for sure. And so to get that corrected, and I saw that they went later in the game, they put two returners back there to try to make it a little bit simpler, but didn't help, ended up with a fumble. But that's one option, is to bring a couple guys back there returning. Another is to just have him simply fair catch, or if it goes over the returner's head, just leave it. You might look at a conservative measure like that and just not risk, not risk a lot just to get your 5 or 6 yard gain. It's just not worth it. So, I got to have a lot of work in that area this week. I'm sure they'll put together a game plan to simplify it.
It was an uncharacteristic day for the Jerry Kill special teams, I agree. It's something that this would have to be the first or second time in Kill's 4 or 5 years here that it's been this bad, especially in the punt return game. For fans wondering and why Craig James wasn't replaced, the two backup returners are Brian Body Calhoun and Keontae Harden, and both of them were out with injury in the second half. So, rather than repping someone who hasn't been returning punts all game, or in the last few weeks at least, they took their chance with the Craig James, and it almost shot him in the foot. So I wouldn't expect Craig to be back there against Northwestern. I would imagine guys like KJ May. I would say Berkeley Edwards, but for my unofficial opinion, he looked to be bumping around on the sidelines there pretty good. So. Maybe that solves the whole mystery of Berkeley Edwards, if he's injured of some kind from practice or whatever it is. But I would expect someone like KJ May to probably be back there returning punts against Northwestern on Saturday. Craig is just, he struggled. He almost had that Colorado State touchdown on return there. But other than that, he's muffed 4 or 5, or, bad decisions, receiving a punt inside the 5, or, deciding not to kick it at the 25 and then it rolls inside the 5. It's just, I think he's playing some mind games with himself back there, and I think it may be in good gesture to give him a bit of a rest back there. So Ryan Santoso, I thought he did fine. Nothing to really complain about there, including the 49-yard field goal, the 24-yard field goal. And I thought his directional kicking in the kickoff game was also pretty good. Peter Martell only punted three times because of the offensive success, and two of his three punts were inside the 20. So, again, that's an all Big Ten punter for you. But the punt return game is something they got to figure out, especially at the returner. But, again, for fans wondering why Craig James hasn't or wasn't pulled after 2 months already, again, by Calhoun, he was out with a knee injury, and then Keontae Harden was one. I didn't even know he was injured until I looked down the sidelines there, and he didn't have a helmet on or any pads. He just had his jersey on. So Minnesota literally didn't feel comfortable enough to throw anyone off back there. So we'll see what happens this week against Northwestern.
All right, let's talk a little bit about that defense. You already talked about how they've been affected by with Boddy Calhoun going down with an injury. We know about Travis. Just a number more players went out with injuries this week, so not great. But let's talk about their performance in this game specifically. And Derek, we'll start with you.
I thought that the defense played well enough to win. However, I did think it was a step down from their previous few games. Now that's a relative term. They've been playing really, really high level and playing extremely well in this game. Again, just thought it wasn't quite up to the level that they've played. A couple areas to look at. They defended, had a little bit of difficulty defending the run, especially in passing situations. I really felt like the Ohio coaches made a decision in their game plan when they got in third and long or some real long, obvious passing situations that they just weren't going to take a lot of shots against the Gopher secondary, which is a sign of respect for what the secondary has done so far. So they chose to run in a lot of those situations and just standard run games. But, with the secondary sitting back and the defense, not poised to defend the run, I thought they struggled on that. Specifically, when we talk about the secondary, we'll get into it. But I thought that the secondary and some of the guys that had to come in due to injuries really had struggled in that area as well. And then secondly, they had some, in the three-step passing game, they had a few plays completed against them, or successful plays. And I think that's partly due to just a really good game from the Ohio quarterback, made good decisions, made some really nice throws, some tough throws, Gophers defense stayed in man coverage. And so when they brought it blitz, they were throwing back shoulder and were able to complete some of those. So again, overall for the defense, I would say they played well enough to win, not quite up to what they've played in the previous weeks, but good enough.
Yeah. Here we are talking about how Minnesota gave up 24 points. And it's, disappointing. I mean, it's such a culture change from what we're accustomed to. The one thing that I'm taking away from this game on defense is this defense as a whole now is just, they're just decimated again. I mean, it was the offensive turn last week, and now it's the defensive turn. So I'm a little bit nervous just because of the quality of starters that Minnesota had out for the second half there. I mean, you're talking about an All-American corner and Bobby Calhoun. You're talking about Cody Polk, who K-Fan's Justin Gard said that he could probably play in the second half with a rib injury. But as anyone here knows who's dealt with a rib injury in the past, every time you literally take a breath, it feels horrendous. And he might have tried to give it a go, and it was just like, even for a guy as tough as Cody Polk, who signed his letter of intent to Minnesota from an ice house, I don't even think it could go for him. So, and Antonio Johnson, the starting safety for Minnesota, went out with a concussion, which it didn't look good from that play in the end zone there. And Keontae Harden, basically Minnesota's fifth corner, is out as well with an undisclosed injury. So that's four key contributors within the two deep that weren't playing in the second half. And somehow this Minnesota defense limited this Ohio passing attack that was somewhere in the 40s for passing yards in the second half, which is, I don't know how many times that could be said for in, Gopher defense the last 10 years, that you're basically playing, guys fourth, fifth, or sixth down the depth chart, and the defense is holding up. And so, as a whole, I was a little bit surprised to see not a lot of Jack Lynn this game. I don't know if that was just a schematic decision from Sherrills and Clays, but I saw a lot of Jonathan Celestine, a lot of Devondre Campbell out there. Cody Pope when he was healthy out there. But it was just interesting to see that, you know, a guy who's maybe Sherrill is the most comfortable with at linebacker and Jacqueline not being out there as much. And then Ace Rogers out there, and I don't think he's close to healthy. But Minnesota's going to need him next week against Northwestern, who I'm sure we'll talk about towards the end, but they had 7 injuries as well in their latest game. So they're dealing with the injury bug as much as Minnesota is. But as a whole, not probably up to the standard that Tracy Clays would want. But considering all the injuries that Minnesota dealt with in the second half, I'd say they did pretty okay.
All right, what about a player and maybe a position group that stood out for each of you? Derek, I'd be interested to start with you.
Well, on the defense, I thought the defensive line, I think, physically continued to dominate like they have the last few games. Might not have shown up. It might not have been as visible just given the scheme that Ohio was running. You know, a lot of three-step passing, in which case it's just really difficult to get to the quarterback. They did have some hits on the quarterback. They did end up with a couple sacks when he held on to the ball, which was nice to see. But although, again, might not have been super visible, I just thought they were able to handle that group, Ohio's offensive line, really well. So I think that stood out to see. You know, it's something that we're watching to see if you know, their play is going to drop off or slow down a little bit, or to see if they continue to be as physical and you know, as unblockable as they've been. And I think it was. I think that continued. And, you know, in the secondary, I think as a whole, something interesting to watch, and this is, I feel like Ohio coaches looked at the TCU game specifically, and it's interesting to watch how teams are going to try and game plan for the Gopher defense. And I think in this case, given the respect for the secondary, they ended up with throwing a lot of three-step passes. And in the TCU game, Minnesota ran more zone defense, so TCU was running things like stop routes and out routes and things like that. In this game, Minnesota played almost all man-to-man coverage, so TCU came with a lot of, as I mentioned before, back shoulder throws, you know, broke off routes early in order to get the ball out fast. So that'll be something to watch, and you know, sometimes your best defense for that type of thing is to knock down some passes at the line of scrimmage. And I know Gophers, as they have in previous games, have been dropping one of the D linemen to help out in three-step passing and be able to knock that down. So that's something to look for. But, you know, as kind of a theme, I thought that showed, you know, the respect for the Gopher secondary and that they, in pass coverage, with only a couple breakdowns, I thought that they played really well in coverage-wise to this as well as they have in the previous games.
Yeah, starting with that defensive line, they had 4 tackles for loss and a sack and a couple pass breakups. So while the sacks aren't coming from the end, I think that this defensive line group as a whole has been pretty disruptive. You know, specifically guys like Scott FK and Steven Richardson. I think FK, who's a junior now coming off significant knee surgery, I think if you don't think he's close to 100% now, I don't know when you're going to think he is, because he's been a force out there the last few games. He had 2 tackles for loss again this past weekend, and he looks to be what Minnesota hoped he was last year, and that's very good to see considering he and Hank have another year left. And it's tough to do sometimes, but I think it's safe to say, well, I wouldn't say it's safe to say, but I think I missed on my prediction for Hank FK, you know, having 9 sacks, considering he isn't at 1 yet. So, you know, he was unblockable basically during the Gophers fall camp and in the spring. And I think that's more of a testament to how these offensive tackles from Minnesota do with a speed rush. So, you know, hopefully Hank and TC, Theron Cochran, can get things back on track here. But the group I was probably most impressed with was probably the secondary, considering that all the injuries that are really testing the depth of this Jay Sonnenfeld secondary, between Bobby Calhoun, like I said, out with a knee injury, Antonio Johnson leaves with a concussion, Keontae Harden leaves with an injury, Ace Rogers isn't 100%. You know, Eric Murray, I think, said it best. Before he answered anything at the press conference following the Gophers' win, he said, first and foremost, I want to, you know, talk about these young guys that stepped up for us today. He's talking about how it's a next man up mentality back there, and how guys like Antonio Chanel, who finished with actually six tackles, really just came in and he wasn't overwhelmed. He was basically the Gopher slot corner the entire second half there. And while Ohio did complete a couple passes on him once they saw that they were throwing out a true freshman in there, I think that he played very well considering the time and the situation. So I was impressed with these guys. Kunle Ayinde, a walk-on, who's been second game starting here at safety, I thought he played well. Ace Rogers and Duke McGee, everybody's favorite, guy. Like, it's one of the questions I get most is, where's Duke McGee? Well, now you're finally seeing him, considering all the depth Minnesota has back there. And then, you know, the NFL draft pick and Eric Murray, who's basically, well, he is the only member of this vaunted the secondary left with body out with a knee injury. Demarius popped his hamstring against TCU, and Kill already said he's not playing against Northwestern, so that's not good. And then Antonio Johnson took a nasty, nasty hit on the concussion. So this secondary is definitely going to be tested heading into Big Ten play here with Northwestern and Purdue and Nebraska the next 3 weeks for Minnesota. So hopefully this defense can get healthy, especially in the secondary, sooner rather than later.
So the Gopher offense really took a beating last week, from the press and just fans in general with kind of a really subpar performance against Kent State, only putting 10 points on the board. And, you know, the offense was more or less dreadful running the ball. This week, totally different story, right? Something like 468 yards of total offense, 27 points, fairly effective game for Mitch Leidner. You know, he was 22 of 32 for 264 yards. He had a QBR of 75.3. We had the Shannon Brooks coming out party. You know, he had the long 40-yard run for a touchdown, two touchdowns on the game. So they were much more effective. Derek, I'd like to get your assessment of the offense as a whole and kind of what you saw and what you thought about it.
Well, it was, without question, it was the best game of the year. And I think a couple things they showed in this game, they were able to run multiple personnel sets and multiple formations, which I think really helped. I think coming out of the Kent State game, they were running, down to running just a couple different sets, and I think became fairly predictable, and I think that hurt them. And in this game, I think they had a plan ready for Ohio to really stack the box against the run, and they did at the beginning of the game. And Minnesota, that's where you found come right out with, sort of a flare pass or screen pass. They came out throwing sort of a version of a bubble screen to Wolitarski, and were able to track the field horizontally, which I think really changed the game for them early. Actually, Ohio ended up pulling a guy out of the box then later in the game. And so I think that helped. And in the running game, they were able to run, I think they used a fullback quite a bit more, and I think, in my opinion, that the Gophers have struggled blocking inside with their tight ends. So I think rather than running more two tight end sets, they used a fullback and sort of used them as an up back and out of the shotgun, offset them to one side, and they were able to use that in the zone running scheme, the zone read, and then they went I formation and ran power out of that scheme. So I think both of those, they get a really nice game out of the fullbacks, and that was able to help them diversify. And then later in the game, it was impressive to see Ohio switch about midway through the third quarter to running more zone coverage, and the Gophers were able to respond. That's not always easy to do when you get switched coverages mid-game, and the receivers, I think, responded really well, and, Leidner ended up with his best drive of the year, mainly throwing against zone coverage. So, all in all, for the offense, again, I think if there's anything they're probably disappointed with, it's not coming away with more points. I mean, if you look at the explosive gains they were able to get, the number of them, the number of yards and first downs, they really should have been in the 30s. I think they probably would like to have finished a couple of those drives and come away with more points. But, overall, it was a nice to see a more dynamic, explosive offense, and saw some fun things from some of the young guys too. It'll be fun to watch as the year goes on.
I had the exact same thought, Derek, from watching the game. I kept remarking to the guys in the press box, it feels like Minnesota should have a lot more points than they already have right now, just because they put up 468 yards of total offense and they only managed 27 points. So it was something to, it's it's a good change from last week where you're waiting and seeing, you know, when is this offense going to do anything? And this week, I think they really stepped up. So one guy that I really want to get, you know, after you get your thoughts on Derek is Joe Bjorklund. As I thought, he played a whale of a game. And when, from rewatching all these long runs that Minnesota has, specifically on Shannon Brooks' first collegiate series where he went 3 carries for 71 yards and a touchdown, it seemed like Joe was always pulling and he was always feeling the edge there and giving the crease, Brooks a big crease to run through, and it seemed like he was just flourishing. So for someone who was skeptical on his play last week, which I was, I think that, you know, I don't know that I owe him an apology, but I think that his play was a definite step up from last week. Maybe he's getting a little bit healthier, but he was someone who I thought played extremely well. Eric Carter and KJNA, I thought they did very good jobs in the blocking game for these running backs as well. One of the stats I put out right after the game was that Ronnie Smith and Shannon Brooks, the Gophers freshman running backs, they accounted for half of Minnesota's total yards, which is remarkable. And as a whole, freshmen in this Gopher offense on Saturday accounted for over 65% of the yards, which is remarkable considering that these guys are all freshmen. You know, true or redshirt, whether it be, it's still a bit crazy thinking about the potential that this offense has down the line here. But it was just nice to see that, you know, Rodney and Shannon are going to become a 1-2 punch here. Looking at the stat sheet here, Roderick Williams, who entered the game as the starter for the Stouffer offense, he didn't even get a rushing attempt. So it's clear to see that Minnesota has identified Shannon and Rodney as their two guys going forward. And for all the fans who think that, you know, now since they saw, you know, Shannon Brooks, you know, 10 carries, 82 yards, and 2 touchdowns now, like he should be playing over Rodney, let's slow it down a little bit, okay? Let's slow it down. You can have a little bit of a thunder and lightning, a.k.a., you know, Barber and Maroney back in the day. So I think both of their styles complement each other well. Derek, what are your thoughts on the two different, you know, running styles of Rodney and Shannon? Would you agree that they're more, you know, they complement each other? And what did you think of this offensive line play this week?
Yeah, I thought that the offensive line really, we talked about it last week. They physically, it was a letdown, and we talked about them responding, and I really felt like they would. It's just a pride thing with a group like that, and they look at the film, and they know that, you know, X's and O's are one thing, but just being physical is another, and so I definitely thought across the board they responded that way. You mentioned Bjorklund. He did do very well. There's anything they struggled at this year, it's been blocking the second and third levels, getting blocks on those linebackers and secondary, and that was something much improved on Saturday. And on a lot of those power running plays, you had Bjorklund coming up and blocking, folding around and blocking a linebacker, and they did very well on that. I will say, and not to take anything away, but I will say having a more dynamic play set and having some of those things hit outside, like the flare passes and screens and bubbles, and being able to hit things sideline to sideline, really helps that running game inside, because the inside linebackers and outside linebackers have to just flat out have to cover more space. So they're not able to, on the line up at 3 yards deep and on the snap of the ball, run 110 miles an hour towards the line of scrimmage because they know the power is coming. So I thought that helped them. You know, they had those guys reading a little bit, the linebackers reading a little bit more, as opposed to just crashing the line of scrimmage. So, and then on running back front, yeah, you can't, trust me, the coaches, you can't have enough talent at running back, whether that be with, you know, one guy or three guys. And so, believe me, the coaches will find a way to have an impact from those guys, both of those guys. Whether it's, you know, finding certain play sets or formations where maybe one runs better than the other, or certain plays that they carry better than the other, they will find a way to get those guys touches as long as they continue to play. I thought the best thing for that group, for the running back group, was seeing them create some explosive plays on their own when they reach the second level. You know, the X's and O's are one thing, and, you know, the blocking is clean up front, but many times those guys were at 5 yards and could have had a 5 or 7 yard gain. But as you saw, were able to, you know, either break a tackle or make a move or do something just to create an explosive play. And that's what they really needed. You know, 2 weeks ago, we were sitting here talking about where are they going to get their explosive plays? What type of plays? Are they going to be deep passes? Are they going to be, you know, jet sweeps? What's going to happen? And it's nice to see that developing, because that they'll need that. You're just, you know, as the competition gets tougher, you're going to need to come up with explosive plays in addition to that consistency.
All right, let's talk a little bit about that passing game. You know, Mitch Leidner had probably his best game this season. And I'd really be curious to get your impression even on the young wide receivers and the tight end group as well, Derek, just to get an idea of what you thought they did better this week in getting open and maybe even just executing from Leidner's standpoint.
Yeah, I thought that they, the first thing was that they really mixed it around. You saw some nice catches from the tight ends, even some nice catches from the fullbacks, which I think helped the wide receivers. You know, they were able to hit some of the tight end play action, or tight end and fullback play action flat routes, which I think opened things up a little bit for the receivers. It was, again, being a little bit more dynamic, I think, helped those guys, you know, with their routes and keeping the defense honest and making those guys in zone coverage have to look at two or three different things. So that was encouraging to see. And, you know, the young guys, it was fun to see some flashes, and it'll be something exciting to watch, you know, as the season goes on. I think just, you know, taking a step back and looking at this offense over the last several years, I think that's something that's been lacking. And so that will only help things like the run game. I know they want to run the ball 65% of the time, and they'd like to pound it as much as they can. And if they're doing that and they can be conservative and play defense, they're happy. But there are going to be times when you have to, again, get more dynamic and get more plays out of that group at wide receiver. And so it was nice to see some flashes, you know, on Saturday and look for that. They will find, you know, some of those guys in space looked really fast and looked like they were, you know, had the ability to make plays. So I would expect the coaches to set up to find more ways to get those guys the ball in space. Doesn't always have to be a go route, doesn't have to be chuck it downfield, you know, in man coverage. You know, they can throw in things like a wide receiver middle screen, some of these switch routes and things like that to get those guys into space and let them run after the catch. And that's, you know, that's something that they just, frankly, they haven't had a lot of that over the last few years. So if they can develop that, that's another dimension that will help the whole scheme on offense in general.
Yeah, I agree. It was nice to see some flashes, specifically from the wide receiver position, and even more specifically from guys like Isaiah Gentry and Rashad Still. I got so many comments after the game about, Isaiah Gentry's burst upfield there after he found the soft spot in the zone. And there hasn't been many Gopher receivers in recent memory who can catch the ball, you know, 10, 15 yards, and then from a dead stop go 0 to 100 real quick. And really, yeah, I mean, he was running away from guys who had a head start on him as they already had momentum. And he took in an extra 20 yards there. And it's encouraging to see all things like that. So, you know, Rashad Phil finally got a play where he can, you know, make a play on the ball on the sidelines from Leidner there when Minnesota was basically in their own end zone there. And Shannon Brooks had a heck of a pickup there on the linebacker to make sure that Leidner wasn't Swiss cheese there. So, you know, it was encouraging. Obviously, Minnesota finished with over 250 yards of total passing. And, you know, Robbie Smith was actually the second leading guy with four catches for 28 yards. So it's nice to know that if you do go to the check down or in the screen game, that you have a guy like Rodney or a guy like Shannon who can make plays. But as far as Mitch Leidner, I didn't think he was awful. I mean, I didn't think he was good. I thought he was average. He almost ended the comeback there on the final drive. He horribly underthrew it to KJ May, who was 15, 20 yards on the left sideline, and it should have been. I don't know that Leidner could put it in a better spot for the Ohio defensive back there. It literally hit him right in the hands, and he just dropped it. But at the end of the day, I guess it doesn't really matter because he didn't make the play. And Leidner finishes with a career high in passing yards with 264, and he doesn't throw a pick, and he doesn't have a turnover. So, you know, he scored one on the ground. So, again, I don't think that, you know, it's an unpopular opinion, but I don't think Mitch Leidner is the worst thing that's happened to Gopher football, and it doesn't seem to be a common thought out there. So I think that Mitch is he's getting more comfortable, which is good to see, especially as Minnesota heads into Big Ten play this week. And they're going to need him to be comfortable back there, and they're going to need this offensive line to try and keep him upright as much as they can, trying to get the game established on the ground. And if they're able to do that early on against Northwestern, I think that while, you know, Derek touched on, you always don't need to take the deep shots. But, again, I think that you'll be able to see a play-action game potentially early on against Northwestern if Minnesota has a couple of good ones on the ground. And finally having a target out there like Isaiah Gentry, who looks to be healthier and healthier each week. Again, you saw his burst from a standstill. Can you imagine him one-on-one against a defensive back in the middle of the field? And I don't think even Leidner is going to overthrow that one, but we'll have to see it. Again, there were a lot of encouraging signs from both the passing game and the running game against Ohio. And again, Ohio's a pretty good team. They're 3-0. They beat Marshall, and Marshall beat Purdue. So if you think of Ohio as just, oh, they're just a MAC team, okay, well, they're better than Purdue, and Purdue's awful. So, I'm tired of hearing, Minnesota beat two MAC teams. Okay, the MAC's not as bad as the MAC used to be. And these teams are getting better each year. So, again, Ohio's not awful. Ohio is probably better than Colorado State. I think it's pretty safe to say that here early on. So while it wasn't, Minnesota running away and everybody's favorite player on the Gophers right now, Demery Crofton, play, I still don't think he has to. Mitch has been fine.
Mm-hmm.
Again, he has not been awful. He's not been great. He's been fine. Minnesota can win with fine if their defense can get healthy and they can keep establishing things in the running game. But we'll have to see how all that, works in theory against Northwestern on Saturday.
All right. So I think we have to touch on the 2-minute drive. And I think part of the reason we have to do that is the kill staff, as long as they've been here, they've really struggled in 2-minute situations for the most part. But this season, you already have two instances where Mitch Leidner has led this team down for a game-winning score in the Colorado State game and now the Ohio game. I'm curious, Derek, specifically from you, maybe what's changed or how have they been able to improve on that, where in recent years that they've been dreadful in the 2-minute drill?
I think if you could point to one thing in the past few years that's kept them from being able to run a 2-minute, it would be 3-step quick passing. This is the first year, and we talked about it after the very first game when they threw just a handful of them, but we were talking about the fact that that's the first time we've seen that ever in the time that Kill has been here. That's not been their identity. They've been a run the ball and a play action, 5-step drop, slow developing passing play team. So I think that's what's changed this year. It was probably, if I had to guess, it was probably a point of emphasis for the staff when they look from year to year in the off season and they look at things and say, what do we have to develop on each side of the ball? They've talked about, we build this foundation and now what's the next level and what's the level after that? And I just think it's something they've added in the off season are the quick passes. Mitch doesn't have an incredibly fast release, but he's gotten it fast enough to be able to use that from time to time. And so that's, I think, been the biggest difference. I also wanted to mention on the final drive, a very key to that drive was having all the timeouts that they had. And I know we were going to touch on coaching, and I just wanted to mention that because the Gophers were able to run in some passing situations because they had those timeouts. It really helped them move the ball. I think Rodney Smith had a 12-yard gain in the middle of the drive. I mean, those safeties, Ohio had two safeties at 20 yards deep. Which really makes it nice, gives you nice running lanes up front to be able to take, what might have been a 5-yard gain to a 12-yard gain. And then also on the touchdown, The fact that they were able to set up, you know, inside the red zone and be able to have a, you know, a dual threat, be able to pass. I mean, I think Ohio was set up for the pass. They blitzed the middle linebacker, but ultimately they left, you know, ended up with a one-on-one with the linebacker and the safeties were out, you know, ready in coverage. So I thought that was also key, being able to, you know, going in that last drive, having the timeouts with as little time as they had, I thought that helped them a lot.
Yeah, I mean, I can't thank Luke enough for bringing this up. I literally went gift by gift on this final drive today in the Gopher Digest. And it was a drive that went 11 plays, 78 yards, in 2 minutes and 6 seconds. I mean, one of the last times in Leiter and, you know, Rodney and Shannon, they all touched on in the press conference after. I mean, this team was comfortable with it. Going 2 minutes, and especially in late-game situations, you look back to Colorado State, where they had to have the drive to come back to tie, take the lead there late in the fourth. And here they did it again. So it's not something new to them. You know, I thought, you know, Leiter had the one bad throw that should have been picked off, but other than that, he was fine. The throw right after, he floated right over the Mike linebacker's head for a nice completion to Eric Carter up the middle there. And he used his check downs well. And it's nice to see that if Rodney Smith is lined up against a linebacker, specifically a Mike, yeah, that's not going to be a matchup that's going to be lasting much longer, as Ronnie's starting to prove that he's a dual threat. He can run it and he can catch it. And if he catches it in the open field and it's one-on-one with a linebacker, the linebacker's not going to be winning many times. So it's something that I think this Gopher offense is very comfortable with, especially, I mean, Leiter's come out and said he's most comfortable in the 2 minute when he knows – you know, he knows all the route combinations. There's only 4 or 5 plays or whatever it is. I don't know what the size of the 2 minute playbook is, but he knows those pretty well. He knows he can just make quick snap decisions and he can go from there. So I thought that the execution on that last drive was remarkable. They were efficient. Again, as Derek said, they had all the time out, so there was never any worry. They only ended up using one of them on that. So execution as a whole in that final drive was really nice to see.
All right, to kind of close this podcast out, I'd like to get your assessment on coaching in particular, you know, from a game plan standpoint and then just an execution in terms of, like, for instance, like the timeouts. Very often I feel like the Jerry Kill Jerry Kill led team here at Minnesota has burned a lot of those timeouts early, whether that be, you know, defensive alignments or, you know, can't get a play in time or whatnot. Derek, I'd like to get your opinion on what you thought of the game plan and then the coaching in game.
Yeah, I thought on the offensive side, again, was impressed with the game plan ready for what they thought Ohio was going to bring, which was, you know, stopping the run, because that's been Minnesota's identity. And I like the packages that they brought to counter that. And it just felt like, you know, again, all around they were made Ohio defend more of the field, were able to get them to switch personnel, you know, about 2.5 quarters into the game, even switch coverages, you know, which was a testament to them just being able to move the ball all game long. On the defensive side, I thought the game plan was good. They, like I mentioned before, they really stayed in man-to-man coverage the whole game. I think they felt that Ohio's receivers just were not going to be able to break coverage against the Gophers, and so they were very comfortable living in that. You know, after the first drive, where again they had a couple breakdowns in man coverage, and after that, I thought they recovered. As we touched on earlier, it'll be interesting to see. I think teams are going to continue to try to run the ball against them out of real spread formations. You know, things like little option game that TCU and Ohio ran out of like 4 wide receivers and run the ball with the quarterback. I think that's something that Northwestern will probably attempt. And then, you know, just this quick passing game. I think teams have resolved to trying to pass the ball against Minnesota in those situations and get things underneath and pass underneath the defense and, you know, get 4 or 5 guys out in patterns and just try to find the open man. So, you know, again, I thought the game plan and defense was fine. I think that, you know, things to work on again would be maybe defending the 3-step a little better. And then some of the run fits from the secondary on some of the, you know, long runs, and they were able to convert probably too many third downs that I think that's a point of emphasis to the staff, and they're probably looking at that this week. But so all in all, on offense and defense, I think the game plans were good. Going into it, for what it's worth, I thought that Ohio was pretty well coached, especially on offense. I thought they had a pretty good game plan again for the Gophers, to take on the Gophers and use what they could as best they could. And then, you know, game strategy, I think the Gopher staff, last thing I'll say is I think the Gopher staff has prepared for close games. I mean, they know that the Gophers defense, that's their strength. They're not sure at this point the consistency or the explosiveness they're going to get out of the offense. So I think they're prepared to coach the game and strategize the game ready for a close game come the fourth quarter, maybe no matter who they're playing. So I think that's something they'll be keyed in on. You know, like we mentioned, they kept the timeouts towards the end of the game, which set up nicely for the final drive. And, you know, I think that was, you know, made part of the difference to be able to have them score at the end of the game. And I think they were ready for it.
Yeah. The only thing that I would have, I did have questions about, but now giving it 24, 48 hours to look back and reflect, you know, was the special teams part. And I can see now why the coaching staff didn't pull Craig James, obviously, because Boddy and Keontae were the two backups. And what are the chances that both of those guys go down and that Craig James has the muffs? It's very, very low percentage, and it happened. And rather than rep someone like KJ May back there who hasn't taken a punt snap in over a month since fall camp, I wouldn't say – it's tough to say it was a wise decision considering Craig muffed three punts, but again, you can understand the risk aversion strategy that Minnesota took there. And the same thing goes for Shannon Brooks returning the kickoff there, and he touched it on the 6-yard line. Antonio Johnson was the main guy back there, and then Antonio went out, and that was, I think, Shannon's first snap at kick return there in the second half. And it's not a it is a coaching decision, but again, you can't not. It's tough to fault the coaches when Shin, you know, he should know where he is in the soft, know that he's right next to it, and you probably shouldn't touch it. So it's tough for me to fault them there. But I thought the plan, like Eric said, was a lot better. I thought that Lion Grover really switched it up from previous games. He was a little bit more creative. He put playmakers in the right spot to make a play, and you know, coaching looks a lot better when the offense actually executes what Lime Grover's being called, and they didn't really execute well last week. And this offensive line woke up a little bit, specifically guys like Joe Bjorklund, Josh Campion. They were guys that I thought played very well compared to last week. So everything looks a lot better when you execute it. I think coaches will tell you that 100 out of 100 times. Defensively, it's tough to fault them with the slew of injuries that occurred. But for the most part, I thought they played pretty well. There were a couple coverage breakdowns, and that was even with all the starters in. One of those 40-yard pass plays in the middle of the field, but it looked like Boddy was playing zone and Johnson was in man. So I don't know which one of them was wrong there, but it's something they're going to have to get figured out. So, for the most part, coaching, again, as Derek touched on, and he probably would want to come back to, Minnesota had 3 timeouts going into that last 2-minute drive. And just knowing that for a quarterback, I'm assuming, knowing that in the back of your mind that if something does go wrong, that you have those 3 timeouts to use and not none, so you can't screw up, it's kind of a little bit of a security blanket, I would probably think. But Derek would probably know better than me, but I thought timeout management was fine. It's tough to argue with most of that is, you know, Minnesota won the ball game, and I thought their execution was pretty good.
Yeah, I was just going to add, Brian, the timeouts on the last drive, but one thing that's really nice for is a sack. You know, the worst thing you can have in a 2-minute drill is to get sacked with, you know, without any timeouts left or maybe 1 timeout left because you got to burn it. Sacks just take forever off the clock because all the receivers have to come back, get lined up. The clock keeps running, obviously, so that also takes the pressure off a little bit, knowing that if you do, you know, if there's a breakdown and you do end up with a sack, you don't have to burn your last time out, or worst case, if you don't have any left, you're going to burn, you know, at least 20, 30 seconds off the clock.
All right, Derek, I do have one last question for you. Just curious about that delay of game call where the kicker kicked the ball after the timeout was called. I thought that was really kind of a I kind of understand why it's like the letter of the law call, but I don't quite understand why he needed to be penalized for that, given how, you know, he's so focused on making a kick, and how does he know that the timeout was called, etc. I'd like your opinion on that.
Yeah, it's so it's one of those cases where it's fully within the official's discretion to make the call, but you don't see it called very often, if ever. So I think that's the issue that people have, and I think maybe there's some confusion with the fact that it's called a delay of game. That type of call is made for play extending after the whistle, basically. And so, for example, if there's a a runner who's running with the ball and he's tackled and he's called down and, you know, the ball is fumbled, if the team way after the whistle picks up the ball and runs 70 yards downfield, pretending that they're running it back, for that can be called as a delay of game. And again, it's just, it's because, you know, to keep the stoppage of play intact and not allow teams to continue after the whistle. And so that's the, I guess, the spirit of the rule is so that you're not, you know, kicker's not able to go out and take a mulligan and kick, you know, after a whistle 3-4 seconds and get a practice kick in on the field. I mean, that's the idea behind the rule. But yeah, it's tough because it's just never, it's just hardly ever, if ever, called. And so it was kind of an odd situation. It was 2 or 3 seconds after the whistle blew. You can call it. It's not a wrong call, but just rarely called.
Yeah, that was, I think there was some confusion about that, as you said, just because it was a delay of game. As Derek said, it's up to the official's discretion there. And so they felt like they called the timeout in adequate, with an adequate amount of time before the snap occurred. And, you know, the kicker had a chance to hear it. I don't, you know, I have to go back and watch that specific play to see when the official started putting his hands up in the air. But I believe it was like 4 or 5 seconds after the timeout that the kick came. And so the official thought it was, again, it's his discretion. And for those who think that, you know, there was a very good chance that Ohio's kicker could have made it, I wasn't that nervous. Knowing how, I mean, the kicker already shanked one earlier in the game, and it was luckily called back on a false start penalty. And he was 1 of 3 coming into the day, and he had never made one this season over 30 yards, 37 yards before he made the 44. So attempting a 54-yard field goal with a guy who's not very accurate doesn't instill a lot of confidence in me. But as Derek said, the delay of game call specifically was just a little bit confusing, and most fans didn't know why. So I hope the explanation there is adequate enough for everybody. But I think that'll wrap things up for this podcast. Again, we can't thank Derek Burns enough for joining us here tonight. Breaking down the Ohio game, the Gophers are now 3-1, heading into the conference season against top 15, top 20 opponent Northwestern at Northwestern this weekend. So we're excited to have Derek on, and hopefully another Gopher victory, which would be a heck of an accomplishment considering the state of all the injuries here with Minnesota. But I think fans have learned that to never count out a Jerry Kill coach football team. So again, Derek, we can't thank you enough for joining us, and we're looking forward to having you back again next week.
Appreciate it, guys.
All right, and for Luke and I and Derek, we thank you guys for listening to the Gopher Digest, Gopher Gridiron Radio podcast tonight. And again, if you enjoy the podcast, we encourage you to leave a review on iTunes, Stitcher, or however you do get this podcast. So again, thanks for listening, and go Gophers.